Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, July 3rd, 2020. Abbott calls for face mask mandate. Executive order applies to counties with 20 or more coronavirus cases. By Stuart Doreen. One day after Midland Mayor Patrick Payton talked about politically motivated body of values lightweights violating Midlanders' civil liberties, Governor Greg Abbott ordered that face mask coverings must be worn in public across most of the state. The order, which goes into effect at 12:01 p.m. Friday, requires all Texans to wear a face covering over the nose and the mouth in public spaces in counties with 20 or more positive COVID-19 cases, with few exceptions. Midland ended Thursday with 772 cases, an increase of nearly 650 since June the 1st. Payton said Wednesday he wouldn't mandate the wearing of masks, for I will not become party to a city that is policing and citing the general public for not wearing a mask. He also said that a mandate by the government is unenforceable, as is any mandate here in Midland. Not to mention, we have already come too close to trampling civil liberties in the ways we have treated businesses and the ways we have treated a free people. The city of Midland reported Thursday that the mayor will make a statement today. The Texas Department of State Health Services reported Thursday that there are 175,977 confirmed coronavirus cases and 2,525 virus-related deaths. Abbott's executive order also gives mayors and county judges the ability to impose restrictions on some outdoor gatherings of more than 10 people, and making it mandatory that with certain exceptions, people cannot be in groups larger than 10 and must maintain 6 feet of social distancing from others. Last week, a different executive order from the governor closed down bars and forced restaurants to reduce their capacity from 75% to 50%. Wearing a face covering in public has proven to be one of the most effective ways we have to slow the spread of COVID-19, Abbott stated. We have the ability to keep businesses open and move our economy forward so that Texans can continue to earn a paycheck. But it requires each of us to do our part to protect one another, and that means wearing a face covering in public spaces. If Texans commit to wearing face coverings in public spaces and follow the best health and safety practices, we can both slow down the spread of COVID-19 and keep Texas open for business. Midland physician Summer Merritt told the Reporter Telegram on Thursday that she was shocked yet pleased when she heard about Abbott's latest mandate. Merritt has worked with the group Protect Our Frontline to bring more attention to proper action government can take to benefit community health. It will save a lot of lives and flatten the curve again, Merritt said. Tassa Richardson, a Midland Health spokeswoman, told the Reporter Telegram in an email, "While we hope to appeal to our neighbors' commitment to protecting each other and advancing the health of the whole community, it has been apparent that some may need more than encouragement. We are very hopeful that the governor's new mandate reinforces what we all know needs to be done to limit the spread of COVID-19. And its potentially devastating impact on our community." Payton has said mask mandates are filled with exceptions, just like stay-at-home orders created earlier in the pandemic. The executive order calls for a verbal or written warning for a first-time violator of this face covering requirement. A person's second violation shall be punishable by a fine not to exceed $250. Each subsequent violation shall be punishable by a fine not to exceed $250 per violation. The executive order prohibits confinement in jail as a penalty for the violation of any face covering order by any jurisdiction. According to Abbott's order, the face covering requirement does not apply to any person younger than 10 years of age with a medical condition or disability that prevents wearing a face mask, who is consuming food or drink, or is seated at a restaurant to eat or drink, exercising outdoors or engaging in physical activity outdoors, and maintaining a safe distance from other people not in the same household, who is driving alone or with passengers who are part of the same household as the driver, obtaining a service that requires temporary removal of the face covering for security surveillance, screening, or a need for specific access to the face, such as while visiting a bank or while obtaining a personal care service involving the face, but only to the extent necessary for the temporary removal, swimming in a pool, lake, or similar body of water, who is voting, assisting a voter, serving as a poll watcher, or actively administering an election, but wearing a face covering is strongly encouraged, who is actively providing or obtaining access to religious worship, but wearing a face covering is strongly encouraged, or giving a speech for a broadcast or to an audience. Not accepted from this face covering requirement is any person attending a protest or demonstration involving more than 10 people and who is not practicing safe social distancing of 6 feet from other people not in the same household. When we are jumping through hoops with exceptions and explanations, we are not serving the people. We are controlling and manipulating the people, Peyton said Wednesday. 41 Midland Health employees test positive. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. 41 Midland Health employees have tested positive for the coronavirus and are self-quarantining, President and CEO Russell Myers said Thursday. Those staffers are from across Midland Health's network, he said, which includes Midland Memorial Hospital as well as several clinics and medical offices. The employees are not believed to have been exposed by positive coronavirus patients. He said officials believe all the cases are community acquired. Our staff live in this community. They are active in this community, and just like we're seeing with hundreds of new positives, our people are among those. Myers said they require employees to wear masks and practice social distancing while at work, but they have little control over their behaviors outside of work. We're not in control of their behaviors once they leave the hospital, he said. They're going to behave just like other people in the community do. The number of staff testing positive is a growing concern because of the potential for them to expose patients and the staffing shortages that are created when employees are required to quarantine. Any employees who begin experiencing symptoms are immediately told to self-isolate and test for the virus. One critical care physician at Midland Memorial Hospital tested positive for the coronavirus in April. More than 20 other critical care employees were said to have been exposed by that physician, but none of those staff tested positive at that time. Myers said Thursday the 41 employees are considered to all have active cases, though they are in different stages of the disease. MMH faces testing backlog as cases spike. Hospital to begin using rapid response machines. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Before coronavirus cases began spiking in Midland, Midland Memorial Hospital was receiving results from their drive-through testing site within 24 to 48 hours. But as the demand for testing increases through the state, the hospital is experiencing a significant backlog, with some tests still outstanding more than a week after being sent to the lab. During a press conference Thursday morning, MMH CEO Russell Myers acknowledged the delay and said testing has become increasingly challenging. The labs across the country are getting overwhelmed with the volume of testing they're being asked to do, and we're seeing the impact of that. Meyer said they're receiving many results within 5 to 6 day window, but at least one test has been outstanding 10 days since June 30. To help mitigate the extended turnaround times, MMH has acquired several rapid response machines that can return results in 10 to 20 minutes. Midland Health has been checking the accuracy of the machines and training staff on operating them. Meyer said they hope to phase in the rapid response machines next week and do a mix of rapid tests and lab tests before transitioning solely to rapid tests. When they make that transition, depends on the number of rapid testing swabs they're allotted, as well as the accuracy of the machines. While there aren't any false positives, there is the occasional false negative, he said. The accuracy of the machine on the negative side is not perfect. Those who have COVID-19 symptoms but test negative on the rapid response machines likely will have their swabs sent to a lab for further testing. Additionally, anyone with symptoms should self-isolate regardless of a negative test result. Meyer said Midland Memorial is planning to set up a second drive-through site next week. The requirements to be tested at that site will be the same as the first site. Residents will either need to be screened through the 68 nurse hotline or have a referral from a primary care physician. Oil prices close above $40 in holiday-shortened week by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Crude prices traded in a narrow range but ended the week above $40 as traders prepared for the 4th of July weekend. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange posted a second day of gains, adding 83 cents to close at $40.65 per barrel, up from $39.70 Monday. The posted price added $1 to close at $37.25 a barrel. Natural gas prices on the NYMEX also rose, adding 6 cents to 1.734 per MCF, up from 1.709 on Monday. Bloomberg reported oil prices got a lift from exports of a bigger-than-expected drop in U.S. crude stockpiles, down 7.2 million barrels, according to the Energy Information Administration. The new agency also said prices were supported by a survey showing output from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries had fallen in June to the least since 1991, while Russia reached near total compliance with its OPEC Plus quota. Jesse Thompson, senior business economist at the Houston branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, said in a phone interview that he doesn't know what to make of what the markets are doing. The market didn't move much. West Texas Intermediate Midland is tracking with Cushing. It started the week just under $40 a barrel and ended the week at just under $41. You have a lot of stories about why the market is doing what it's doing. You have curtailment from OPEC. Demand is up. Inventories are trickling down. Petroleum product inventories are trickling down. On the other hand, a lot of decline is on land storage is just making room to drain floating storage. The bigger story, he said, is the resurgence of the COVID-19 virus, with cases surging in the nation's three most populous states, California, Texas, and Florida. That, with the looming possibility of the return of quarantines or stay-at-home orders, has dampened people's expectations of rising oil demand. Oil prices reflect nothing to do with the physical aspects of the market. They have a lot to do with expectations of stimulating oil demand and the broader economy. He predicted oil prices will remain in narrow band as traders wait to see the market show more fundamental strength. Globally, we are seeing floating oil storage go down. We're seeing it go down in the Gulf of Mexico and in the Northeast. We want to see investors draw down, and a lot of people are waiting to see what happens with the resurgence of the virus, if that'll mean more rollbacks of business openings. U.S. rig count falls for the 17th straight week. Total is at 263, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN CEWEN at MRT.com. U.S. rig count reported by the oilfield services firm Baker Hughes reached another record low and fell for a 17th consecutive week, but the decline continues to moderate. Baker Hughes, which released its report early because of the 4th of July holiday, said the rig count fell 2 to 263 for the week. That is down 70 rigs from 963 a year ago. The national rig count has plunged 63% so far this year, and the 263 is well below the previous low of 404 set in May 2016. Again, Texas did not lead the decline, with its rig count of 112 unchanged from the previous week. New Mexico posted the sharpest drop among producing states, falling 2 to 48. The Permian Basin fell 5 rigs to 125 and has shed 317 rigs since this time last year, when there were 443 rigs at work in the region. Eddy County, New Mexico, remained the most active in the Permian, with 30 rigs, unchanged from the previous week. Lee County, New Mexico, followed with 18 rigs, down 2 for the week. Loving County added 2 rigs for a total of 16 within the county lines. Martin County reported 14 rigs for the second week, and Midland County dropped 1 rig to 11. Upton County added 1 rig for 10 this week. According to the Energy Survey, the Utilization Equipment Index, which includes rigs, suggested significant contraction in quarter two, with the index at minus 69.2. According to one of our special questions, 45% of the executives in the survey believe U.S. drilling and completions activity will return to pre-COVID-19 levels by quarter 4, 2021, and 84% believe it will return in 2022 or later. 16% believe it will never return. In remarks during its second quarter earnings call with analysts provided to the Republic Reporter Telegram by Helmer Campaign, the company has reduced its field workforce by over 2,800 because of the decline in activity. Our expectations for the remainder of fiscal 2020 include continued declines in rig activity, most of which will occur in the third quarter. John W. Lindsay, President, CEO, and Director, told analysts, "Our experience has shown us that two factors hold the key to surviving a downturn and ultimately furthering the strategic objectives of the company. First, maintaining financial strength, and second, maintaining a long-term view for future potential opportunities. In this regard, we will remain focused on establishing new commercial models, expanding our digital technology offerings to customers, increasing our international presence, and cost management. The importance of well economics is magnified under these stress conditions, and combining our digital technology solutions in the commercial model becomes even more appealing to some customers, who recognize that well-borne quality and placement improves the lifetime value of the well. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused everyone to adjust to new realities, such as remote office environments and in our field operations, to the logistical challenge of reducing virus exposure and screening rig site crews and third-party personnel. As a result, we are seeing a new surge in interest for remote drilling and automation technologies." Lindsay said, "Although the timing of recovery is not clear, the consensus of the industry is that when it does occur, it is likely to be at a higher velocity than previous recoveries. With deep cuts to personnel, we could expect any recovery will occur without the benefit of a large portion of the industry's seasoned veterans, as many will likely leave the energy industry during this latest downturn. While the nearest While the near-term focus is clearly on cost reduction, customers are not just reducing their human workforce, they're also asking how their organizations need to change to survive and be competitive with increasing cyclicality. And like other industries have experienced, automation and digitization of operations is common in these conversations.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, July 3rd, 2020, Section A. Odessa, Part of Abbott Mask Mandate, by Michael Merlo. Governor Greg Abbott authorized an executive order Thursday requiring Texans in public areas to wear face coverings in counties with 20 or more positive COVID-19 cases, with few exceptions. The order will go into effect at 12:01 p.m. today, Friday, July 3rd. The governor also issued a proclamation giving mayors and county judges the ability to impose restrictions on some outdoor gatherings of over 10 people and making it mandatory that, with certain exceptions, people cannot be in groups larger than 10 and must maintain 6 feet of social distancing from others, Abbott's press office detailed in an email. The executive order, which includes Odessa, comes days after the Odessa City Council shut down a city mask mandate in a 5-1 vote. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said in Thursday's virtual hospital briefing that it's about time Abbott issued a mask mandate. Even if we make this change today, Saravanan said, we will still see effects of what's going on for a week or 2 weeks, he said. So our cases are still going to continue to increase despite this order for a week or 2 weeks, and then we'll see it start to stabilize. The Ector County Health Department sent out a press release Thursday detailing 1,092 cases of COVID-19 are in the county. 718 are confirmed positive, and 374 are probable positive. 405 people have recovered from the virus, and 678 cases are listed as active on the county website. The release showed that 1,526 tests are pending, and 9 Ector County residents have died from COVID-19 complications. The Ector County Sheriff's Office main lobby closed to the public Thursday until further notice due to a rise in COVID-19 cases, an ECSO press release detailed. The release instructed that wearing a mask is mandatory and people can reach an investigator at 432-335-3050 to schedule an appointment if needed. ECSO Sheriff Mike Griffiths said in a phone interview that the decision to close the lobby came after a patrol officer tested positive for COVID-19 and exposed multiple people. I've been requiring everybody at the jail to wear a mask, and now I'm making all the employees over at the sheriff's office wear one also, and it appears that there are probably several people who were exposed, but they're telling us to wait 5 days after exposure before we get tested unless somebody develops symptoms, he said. Griffiths had concerns regarding how long test results would take for the peace officers because we can't afford to lose a lot of people to quarantine, he said. An email from ECSO Sergeant Gary Disler detailed that currently 12 inmates and 4 officers have tested positive with COVID-19 out of ECSO and the jail. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton detailed in a text message that the sheriff had to close due to the exposure level, adding that neither the annex nor the courthouse has had that issue. Odessa Public Information Officer Devin Sanchez sent out an email detailing that the 200 tests at the 11 a.m. Thursday mobile testing were signed for about 20 minutes after it began. Medical Center Hospital sent out a press release detailing that out of 450 positive cases, 35 are in the hospital. 21 are on 7 Central, including 2 from Focused Care at Odessa, 2 from Ward, 1 from Andrews, 1 from Kermit, and 1 from McCamey. 14 COVID-19 positive patients are in MCH's CCU, including 3 from Focused Care at Odessa and 1 from Big Bend. 4 in the CCU are reportedly on ventilators. No persons under investigation are in the hospital, and 532 tests are pending. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that MCH is preparing an expansion of another 13 to 28 beds for those in the CCU who may need it. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said that there are patients currently in the new COVID-19 unit on MCH's 8th floor, which opened up this morning. ORMC President Stacy Brown reported that out of 941 tests, 102 have been positive, 688 negative, and 151 are pending. Saravanan said that 11 are in the hospital and 6 are on ventilators, and that ORMC is struggling with staffing nurses. Our nurses have stepped up, but there's only so much of them. They're working overtime, they're covering shifts they wouldn't normally cover, but definitely we need more nursing staffing. Summer Match to Benefit Food Bank by Ruth Campbell. West Texas Food Bank is having its annual Summer Match. It's a $100,000 challenge offered by the Wayne and Joanne Moore Foundation. The target amount is $100,000, which would become $200,000 if the goal is met. Food Bank Director of Communications Craig Stoker said the match lasts through the end of August. It will end sooner if the match is accomplished. Proceeds will be used to help the food bank stay agile during this uncertain time of COVID-19 and economic downturn. The foundation has worked with us for a number of years with the Summer Match. The Summer Match has always had a theme of feeding kids. Summer's always a difficult time for feeding kids because they're not getting breakfast and lunch at school. So summer's really our busiest time, Stoker said. This year's been a little different. The kids haven't been in school since March. We have had to retool how we work completely. And the places where we normally are, their congregant feeding sites. We're not able to do that because of social distancing, trying to maintain everybody's health, Stoker added. One example of the way it's changed is the Reverend Dawn Weeks of Connection Christian Church and her congregation are delivering meals to La Promesa apartments instead of it being a congregant feeding site the way it usually is. Her congregation goes every day and delivers the food to the kids. Feeding the kids looks a whole lot different this year, and we're not entirely sure even what going back to school is going to look like. So the intention of the match is just to raise funds for the food bank. It's, to my knowledge, not kids-specific this year, just because of the way everything is, Stoker said. Ector County ISD is also still feeding children this summer. Visit tinyurl.com/y8ekwznd for more information. Weeks said the food bank is always a warrior for fighting hunger in the community. But in this season of need, they are a force of nature. When you see how long the lines are, how deep the desperation is, and then you see how abundantly and confidently the food bank serves in the face of that fear, then you know they are fully trusting that this community has their back. And we always do, Weeks stated in a text message. Stoker said the food bank wants the money raised from the match to be as liquid as possible. For example, the food bank made an emergency run to Terlingua June 30th because two agencies the food bank served, closed. One of them closed due to COVID-19 and the other as a precaution. So there was nobody to feed the people, and we loaded up and had to make a run down there. So the situation is very fluid, and just making sure that we've got the cash on hand to be able to do those things is really important to us right now, Stoker said. Summer hunger, he said, is a big talking point of ours because a lot of people don't realize that summer is the busiest time for a food bank. We get the most publicity and donations and awareness in that kind of November, December area when it's the end of the year, and it's kind of that season of giving and whatnot. The truth is that May, June, and July are really our busiest months, and they're also kind of the leanest in terms of fundraising because people are spending their money on summer vacations, or this year's an election year, so funds that they may have used for nonprofits are going to support their candidates, or the fact that the economy out here has collapsed. We're at almost 17% unemployment. So there's a number of factors, but a match is always a good challenge. Everybody always wants to have their money doubled, and why not? It goes a lot further, Stoker said. We saw numbers in April where 74% of the people who came here had never been to a food bank before, Stoker said. In May, that was down to about 50%. We'll see what the number is for June, but people don't know. They don't know what to do. I get messages all day asking, how do we get help? Where do we go to? Where do we go? So we've been putting out there with everything. If you do need help, visit our website, give us a call. Call 211 as a resource, and they'll point you to one of our partners, one of our distributions, and we're open to anyone. We're not going to turn anyone away. The pantry, July 1st, got a donation from United Supermarkets. It ran 2.5 hours, and United brought 120 food boxes to distribute. We went through those, and there were still cars out on the street, so I would imagine we got to 150 at least. But the need is still there. Our pantry in Midland, the cars were all the way out to Andrews Highway again this morning, July 2nd. The numbers are just kind of staggering, Stoker said. If you look at June, we distributed 1.25 million pounds of food, and that's really double what we did last year in June. June is always one of our heaviest months. The food bank has reached the point where it was last year when it gave out a little under 6.5 million pounds of food. We've done that this year, and we've still got 3 months left in our fiscal year, Stoker said, July 2nd. The food bank wouldn't be surprised if they distributed 9 million pounds of food. Stoker said the food bank's sweet spot is about 7 million pounds. The overage on that, it just really highlights what's going on with the economy out here, the oil market, and people not being able to work because of COVID, he said. Stoker said he's always grateful for food people donate, but the agency needs money more than anything else right now. Also, they can't take volunteers in an effort to keep everyone safe. Since we don't have volunteers, we've got to reallocate staff to disinfect and go through everything to make sure it's got dates and ingredients and make sure we're following all the food safety guidelines. And we just don't have the manpower right now without volunteers. Until there is a real, provable, tangible reduction in the amount of cases, we're just not going to do that. We can't. We're such a small team that if one of us goes down, it will kind of domino, and that could have a really devastating effect on our operations and serving the 19 counties we serve. So we're being really cautious. I think it's naive to think that none of us will get it. So the goal really would be to kind of flatten the curve. You just don't want everybody to get it all at once, he said. The food bank has implemented stricter procedures for its buildings where masks are required all the time. Coming in, people have to wash their hands and there is a temperature check. Those rules were kept for the warehouse, but now those are in place front of house as well, Stoker said. The food bank has about 50 people on staff, and they have hired a few more, so they will end up around 52. July is the fifth month that we're doing this, but everybody's been really flexible, and if we need some more help with the drive-through line, people will pop up and help out there, Stoker said. He added that the team has done an amazing job. While there are no volunteers currently, Stoker said the National Guard has helped out, but they will be leaving July 9th. To contribute, visit the food bank website, send a check to 411 South Pagewood, or make a donation over the phone, Stoker said. He noted that there also is a lot of information on the website about what the food bank does, how it does it, and resources for people. Local and state news roundup. Motorcyclist involved in two-vehicle fatal collision. A Texas Department of Public Safety press release detailed a 25-year-old motorcyclist died after he was involved in a two-vehicle collision west of Odessa. The reported fatal collision happened at 9:57 p.m. Wednesday at mile marker 108 on I-20, 5 miles west of Odessa. Investigation reportedly showed Wyatt Cody, 22, of Odessa, was traveling west in a 2005 Chevrolet Silverado on the north frontage road of I-20 and approached the on-ramp to I-20. Kevin Luna, 25, of Fort Stockton, was traveling east in a 2002 Kawasaki on the north frontage road of I-20 and approached a yield sign. The motorcycle failed to yield the right-of-way to oncoming traffic and collided with the Silverado. Luna was reportedly pronounced dead at the scene by Odessa Fire Rescue. He was wearing a helmet, and Cody was wearing a seatbelt. Woman spits on counter after being told to wear a mask. Fort Worth. A Texas woman became verbally abusive and spit on the counter of a 7-Eleven after being told she needed to wear a face mask in order to make a purchase. In a video posted on Facebook, the cashier at the Fort Worth store appears to be telling the woman she cannot buy the beer and candy because she is not wearing a mask. The video shows the woman arguing with the cashier, saying she has a right in America not to wear a mask. The clerk points at a sign on the door that tells customers they're required to do so. In Tarrant County, customers are required to wear masks inside of businesses to prevent the spread of coronavirus. Businesses that do not require customers to wear face masks are in violation of the order. Videos of people refusing to wear a mask in public places and reacting aggressively have become common on social media.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, July 4th. Peyton, Mask Mandate is More Executive Overreach by Stuart Doreen. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton was quick to call Governor Greg Abbott's mask mandate executive overreach into matters dealing with community health in a statement that was provided to the media Friday. Peyton also said he was disappointed with the Texas governor, although one can also respect and appreciate the nearly impossible nature of dealing with unprecedented events in the daily lives of Texans. Bearing in mind that community health concerns surrounding COVID-19 seem to change on a daily basis, we must once again adjust to new executive mandates at the local level, Peyton said in the statement. He continued with a populist tone set earlier in the week when he referenced politically motivated body of values lightweights who sought to violate Midlanders' civil liberties. He told residents earlier in the week he had no interest in mandates that were full of exceptions and basically unenforceable. Abbott on Thursday announced a mandate that requires all Texans to wear a face covering over the nose and mouth in public spaces in counties with 20 or more positive COVID-19 cases, with few exceptions. I will not become party to a city that is policing and citing the general public for not wearing a mask, Peyton said Wednesday. We already come too close to trampling civil liberties in the ways we have treated businesses and the way we have treated a few people. The governor's executive order went into effect at 12:01 p.m. Friday. Abbott's order gives mayors and county judges the ability to impose restrictions on some outdoor gatherings of more than 10 people, and making it mandatory that, with certain exceptions, people cannot be in groups larger than 10 and must maintain 6 feet of social distancing from others. County Judge Terry Johnson wrote Thursday, "As the Midland County Judge, I am sworn to uphold the laws of the state and the governor's executive orders. I would encourage all residents of Midland County to be responsible this holiday weekend by maintaining the proper protocols as prescribed by this order." Peyton said Friday that he will not ask the police department to respond to calls reporting individuals in violation of this executive order. "We cannot, and I will not, have our police chasing reports of people in violation of the mask requirement, knowing that there will not only be multiple unenforceable scenarios, but also exceptions and circumstances that make this mask mandate unenforceable throughout the city," Peyton wrote. "I will fully expect our police to pursue any calls related to a threatening or violent situation towards any individual arising out of the application of the governor's mask mandate. As always, police will continue to address matters of public safety through prioritized assessment." NWS, 1.44 inches reported Thursday at Air Park. The National Weather Service reported 1.44 inches of rain fell Thursday night at Midland Air Park. The NWS reported on its website that the rain fell mostly between 7:15 p.m. and 8 p.m. Along with thunderstorms were windy conditions. In fact, between 7 p.m. and 7:15 p.m., the NWS reported sustained winds of 43 miles per hour and gusts reaching 51 miles per hour. There was a trace amount of rain reported at Midland International Airport. Midland ISD closed for summer break. All Midland ISD campuses and offices will be closed through July 12th for summer break. The next Midland ISD board meeting is scheduled for July 27th. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine their health situation, whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. That number is 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate health care option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Know a member of the military coming home? Military families can call 352-0785 or email Vicki Gomez at zemogv@cable1.net when they know their member of the military is flying into Midland International Airport, so the Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee can be there to greet them. Honor those who served. There are many organizations in operation right here in the Permian Basin that are at the task of serving all kinds of needs for present and former members of our military. Some of them are Show of Support, 687-2167. Honor Our Troops, 889-0177. Real Thanks, 528-6633. Centers for Children and Families, 570-1084. Midland College Veterans Affairs Office, 685-4511. Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee, 366-3458. Soldiers of Today and Yesterday, 631-3429.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, July 4th, 2020, Section A. Ector Cutts' Work in Progress by Ruth Campbell. In the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, predictions of lower enrollment and data, Ector College Prep Success Academy CEO Superintendent Robert Bleich said some adjustments had to be made. Ector College Prep, formerly called Ector Middle School, partnered with CEO Superintendent Robert Bleich's Ector Success Academy Network as a way to stay sanctions from the Texas Education Agency for 2 years. Senate Bill 1882, signed into effect by the Texas legislature in 2017, provides incentives for districts to contract to partner with an open enrollment charter school, institutions of higher education, nonprofits, or government entities, the Texas Education Agency website says. Some of those adjustments are still works in progress, but Bleich said the campus had been overstaffed with administrators. There were 7, and now there are 5. Assistant Principal Reagan Paquette has taken an assistant principal post at San Jacinto Junior High School in Midland, and Bleich said Principal Charles Quintela has resigned. He said Mitch Gehrig, who had been an assistant principal and then became Bonham Middle School principal, will be back as principal. With the pandemic and the economic downturn, Bleich said he wants to have a couple of teachers offer social emotional support for students and parents. He said Ector got a letter from Governor Greg Abbott's office saying it needed to prepare for significant budget cuts this year. Schools also are partly funded on average daily attendance, and attendance dropped last year by at least 80 students. This past year, student enrollment dropped by at least 80 students. Bleich said this means a reduction of $600,000 to $850,000 in state funding. Bleich said he is expecting about 1,330 students this fall, compared to a high of about 1,500 in previous years. He said adjustments also were made to the master schedule. Our data showed that our students needed more support in English, English as a Second Language, ESL, and math. So what we've done is adjust a bunch of positions from extra elective classes to more academic support. We're adjusting some positions because in many cases, the teachers who were teaching electives were switched over if we felt that they could do the job and that their credentials allowed for it. But in some cases, that wasn't the case. So where we thought it was appropriate, we made those adjustments. And where it wasn't appropriate, we didn't make those adjustments. The decrease in enrollment, Bleich said, also meant Ector didn't need as many teachers. A prudent decision is to make those adjustments at the semester. We didn't make those adjustments at the semester, which ended up costing us more money. So we ended up not getting the funding for the students that we had been projected to receive at the beginning of the year, Bleich said. He said he expects the downward trend in student enrollment to continue. This trend was really based not on COVID. That trend was based on the adjustment to the boundaries. We didn't see a major reduction in student enrollment the first year, which shocked us. We were anticipating a drop in enrollment, but we didn't see that. The second year was when they saw the enrollment reduction. He added that in spite of the extended school day, the extra support given to teachers to improve, we're still seeing some areas that are concerning. We didn't see the improvements that we wanted to see in reading across the board. We're seeing some improvement, but not to the degree that we want to see. So we're making some adjustments there, and we're providing more support in English. We're providing more support in certain grade levels. We did better in math, but in other grade levels, we didn't do better in math. So we're adding more support to the students' schedules in math, and we decided to add an ESL class for every single ESL student. So any student who is on our campus, instead of mainstreaming them all without extra support, we added 38 sections of ESL classes, Bleich said. He said they added this content area to support students because that's the promise they made to the community. The promise we made to the community was that we're going to give our kids extra support. We're going to extend the school day. We're going to continue to have the balanced program. But we're really going to emphasize literacy. And that was the plan we submitted to TEA. The first year, we made a lot of changes. The second year, I didn't see the growth that we should have seen. So we're using that data to make adjustments to the master schedule. And the adjustments that we made to the master schedule were to add a lot more support in those areas for students, which when you do that, that means there's a reduction in another area. In our case, our school, I think, had more fine arts and elective classes than any other school in the district because it was a residual of the magnet programs that were there, Bleich said. When we inherited the school 2 years ago, we didn't do away with close classes. We minimized some. We made some adjustments, but we didn't really do away with a whole lot, and it had an overabundance of fine arts classes because of the magnet situation, he added. Now plans are to add content classes in core areas and reduce some of the elective classes. We're still keeping them, but we're trying to offer a balanced program so that it's not just heavy in one area. That means that while some of the teachers are capable and able to teach in the core, some are not. So we plugged in, I think, out of 27 teachers, most of them we were able to find a spot for them, and we still have not finalized who exactly is and is not able to fit into these adjustments, Bleich said. On Paquette and Quintella, Bleich said both did a great job. Quintella won the Region 18 Middle Level Principal of the School for the Texas Association of Secondary School Principals. She did a great job, he said of Paquette. She played a huge role in helping the school culture. The same with Quintella. He got the Region 18 Principal of the Year Award. That's a huge honor, and it says a lot about the work he's done on campus. Paquette, Moving On to Midland Middle School by Ruth Campbell. Ector College Prep Success Academy Assistant Principal Regan Paquette is moving to a similar position at San Jacinto Junior High School in Midland, officially starting July 26th. Funding issues are the reason for Paquette, as well as Principal Charles Quintella leaving. CEO Superintendent Robert Bleich said he had to reduce some positions because of a drop in student enrollment and COVID-19, among other factors. Bleich said Mitch Gehrig, who was an assistant principal at Ector and then principal at Bonham Middle School, will be moved back to principal at Ector. It came out of nowhere, and it was really unexpected, Paquette said. It was really hard for me at first because I love the kids. I love the parents. I love working with Mr. Quintella. I took it hard at first, but now I'm taking it as God opened up another door for me to have new opportunities, she said. San Jacinto has 900 to 1,000 students in grades 6 through 8, she added. She will be working with Principal Jessica Gore. She's great. I'm really excited about the opportunity to work for her. She added she and Gore have similar personalities in that she goes for what she wants, doesn't waste time, and takes care of business. It was nice to have that experience where I really felt wanted by her, so I'm excited to work with her and her team. They seem really great, Paquette said. She took on plenty at Ector, but this will be a chance to do even more. I think it's actually going to be a positive experience for me to grow because I'll have more responsibility. It was a little intimidating at first, but in an exciting way. I did a lot at Ector. I did a lot outside my title, so I think I'm ready, Paquette said. She added that she told Gore about all the things she did at Ector and what she worked with Quintella on, and Paquette said Gore is excited about her ideas and experiences. We kind of had similar mindsets about what the ideal school should look like, so it's really exciting that we're already on the same page with a lot of things. The culture is a little bit different at San Jacinto. I think it's just going to be a way to incorporate what I've learned with how Midland does things and kind of help it to expand and improve, she added. The mixture of students will be different at San Jacinto. Many students at Ector had English as a second language and were economically disadvantaged. Paquette said there are low-income students at SJ, but there are also high-income students. I've worked in Dallas. I've worked in Pflugerville, so I have a little bit of experience with all of it. I have no worries about working with anybody, Paquette said. She'll be over all A through L of all grades. Paquette said it was bittersweet leaving ECISD. I cried for a while. Those kids are my life, their parents. I care so much about them. COVID happened and then this happened, so I didn't really get to say goodbye. That's what's mainly been the hardest for me. I mean, those are my kids. I don't have kids of my own, so I tell them all the time, you're my kids, and I love you, and I miss you all the time. So that's been the hardest thing for me. And then also working as an assistant principal for the first time was under Quintella, and that's hard for me too, because I worked so much for him, and we worked so well together. He's the greatest leader in my eyes, Paquette said. But she said San Jacinto has been so welcoming. I know I'll always have Quintella's support, and my family's been super supportive, so it's going to be sad to leave my kids, but I'm really excited for this opportunity. Paquette said she wants to thank all the students, parents, and ECISD for everything they did. I could not have done any of this without my kids and my parents, and of course, Mr. Quintella. They have made this the best experience I could have had as an assistant principal. I hope they always remember how much I love them, and I hope they don't forget about me. But hopefully the San Jacinto students and parents will feel the same way about me once I create those relationships. I'm just excited to hopefully touch their lives as well. Gore said Paquette stood out as an assistant principal candidate because of her drive and instructional knowledge. Last year was Gore's first at SJ. Previously, she worked at Spring Branch ISD with ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray. She's young to be in the administration world, and I could tell through interviews and other people I spoke to that she loves kids and she'd be a hard worker and that she'd bring a lot to our table, Gore said. She said Paquette has a solid reputation, and Quintela spoke so highly of her that I feel we're going to make a really good team. Having worked at Spring Branch, she endured Hurricane Harvey. I feel like educators are made to be adaptable. I was in Houston when Hurricane Harvey hit. We had to adapt, and we survived. And now we've got COVID, and we're going to adapt, and we're going to survive, Gore said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.